storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Brian Moody's. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast segment. I had what I can only describe as an interesting thought. So, I was watching news coverage on the latest mass shooting that took place in California the other day. Today, by the way, is, what is today? Today is January 24th, 2023. And I was listening to it, and obviously, you know, when there's a mass shooting in the United States, as there is just about every day, the mind tends to go towards, well, what can we really do to stop this? And having spent years looking at Dr. King's work and discovering the depth of it, and how Dr. King was able to perceive social ills where others perceived personal responsibilities and liabilities. He saw the actions of people as connected to the activities in society. Now, the first line of thinking that most people would say to hearing this is, don't you dare start to talk about giving these people some kind of social coverage, because things are bad for me and you don't see me running and gunning people down. If every person was the same, I could understand that knee-jerk reaction. But just like there are people who can eat all the fatty foods that they want, and yet they die at a ripe old age of 95, never having suffered from heart disease or anything like that, there are people who will be exposed to the same type of conditions and have two very different outcomes. Ironically, and more appropriately, interestingly, that was not actually how I was approaching this. Even though I do believe there are some sociological issues that should be thought about and looked at. I mean, there is a deep history, obviously, in the United States that is seldom talked about, of massacres, of unwarranted massacres, of Clarence massacres, white people just killing other people because they were other people, they were not white, and they wanted something they had. There is that deep history. We don't tend to talk about it, but there is that. And really, what we call modern-day massacres are indeed contemporary. You know, only in the last 20-plus years has this really been an issue, and really, in the last 10 plus years. Now, I will acknowledge this, because this has to be acknowledged. When black people in the late 80s during the crack invasion, thank you, CIA, thank you, CIA, in the early 90s, mid-90s, when there were a number of weekly mass shootings, they used to call them drive-bys in the black community and in popular culture, those were not typically counted as mass shootings because they were black. So this has been a problem for a while, well over 30 years. But just like with everything, when it's happening in other communities, it is framed significantly differently than when it's happening in the white community, which should be said. Outside of that, though, and I think this is often forgotten, even amongst those drive-bys, you know, I don't believe that they were occurring nationally daily. Daily. And if we wanted to go back far enough, 35 years, maybe, what you discover quickly is that mass violence was not really a national problem. Now, I know, obviously, in the 80s, because of how Republicans operated, the idea that crime was getting out of hand, that was the talking point left over from Mr. Law and Order, I'm not a crook guy. That would be Richard Nixon, for all of you too young to know. They made it appear like crime was a bigger problem than it was. And the Democrats quickly got on board with that and ran with it. But this type of crime was just not in existence. It just wasn't in existence. Now, you know, I've spoken of before, and I really, you know, Rick Perlstein, in his book, The Invisible Bridge, I wish Trump never got elected, because I think if Trump didn't get elected, his last book, Reaganland, which was decent, but it was sterile compared to The Invisible Bridge, I think it would have been a much fuller book, because it seemed almost like it was rushed. Anyway, Rick Perlstein in his book, The Invisible Bridge, makes the connection to culture in that time period, and the influence of not only self-help therapies, but therapy in general. And I really honestly think that there has not been a significant understanding in this society of the importance of post-World War II, I'm sorry, of the importance of the rise during the post-World War II years of therapy. More people were engaged in therapy after World War II than obviously ever before, because, well, before, you know, therapy wasn't a thing that people did. And personal constrictions brought about by social ills and social social, I was going to say impositions, but maybe that's the wrong word. Social requirements really started rising to the collective surface. People began to start to unpack generational trauma. But they did it by unpacking personal trauma. This obviously resulted in negative things, obviously, you know, colleges and even the federal government, usually the intelligence agencies, which really look back at the connection between the intelligence agencies in this country and corporations and Wall Street and right-wing organizations. It's quite an interesting tale. They obviously did some things wrong. They experimented. They used treatments that were just absolutely disgusting and horrific. But, and yes, there needs to be a but there. There was a lot of good that came out of all that too. A lot of good. A lot of good. And I think the positivity, the positiveness of the evolving therapeutic mentality in America, which went really from the 50s through the early 80s when Mr. I'm suffering from a mind that is deteriorating, Reagan, decided that he was going to cut significant funding, federal funding, for those types of services. And whereas it took 30 years to stabilize, to begin to really stabilize the psyche of white people. I mean, there has never really been a study conducted to measure the impact of therapy on race relations. But I really wonder if it had any impact. So it took 30 years to kind of start to, you know, bring this collective trauma to the surface and to start to really deal with some of these innate problems. And you know that it was working. Because, you know, one of the podcasts that I listen to, I used to listen to it more frequently. I don't listen to it as much anymore. But it's a really good podcast called The Dollop. They were talking about a baseball player who grew up, obviously, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. 70s was still playing, maybe not the 40s, probably the 50s, 60s, 70s. And, you know, they were smashed drunk all the time. But by the 80s, that had really turned around. It was no longer appropriate for somebody to be absolutely blitzed all day long. And there were literally, and they were talking about this, there were literally commercials that featured all of these baseball players, you know, football players, people that a certain generation, you know, people who grew up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, would know, saying, look, it's not just five beers, you know, that still gets you drunk, that's alcoholism, you need to get help. That I see as an extension, a projection from this therapeutic mindset. There was significant gains with that mindset throughout the 80s, even though the funding was cut. But as one news report that I saw from the early 80s said, as soon as that funding was cut, you know, places like Skid Row, it was out of California, filled up. Because all of the people who would have been in these institutions ended up out on the street. Now, how long does it take for a society with immense social trauma institutions or social trauma creating institutions, how long does it take for a society without the necessary trauma-relieving institutions, how long does it take for that society to start to crumble? How long? Because, see, in the black community, we have never qualified for mental health I'm looking for a certain phrase, and this is not something that I figured out. There was actually a black psychologist who talked about this. We never qualified for mental health, I believe is what she said, and we rarely, as a community, have the resources necessary to treat the disorders that we gain from existing in this toxic, toxic society. Therefore, the violence that was seen, the destructive actions that were seen in the 80s and the 90s, this psychologist looked at that and said, look, it's not, this isn't unusual. When you have a community that is racked with so much trauma, this is what happens when you don't treat that trauma. Now, this is something that we rarely talk about. I know we're starting to talk about it, but we're starting to talk about black trauma in relationship to how the rest of the society can deal with it, can handle it, when the black trauma needs to be something that is dealt with on terms of blackness. It's, you can't deal with black trauma, people from Africa, using strictly European concepts. Which brings me to the European in America, what we call the white American. We, as a black community, we have experienced in the last 40 years a degradation, a destructive tendency in our community as we have tried to deal with the trauma that we have gained, but also as we've tried to deal with being integrated into an alien culture, a culture that does not hold the same value for humanity as we do. And thus that has resulted in some horrible, horrible consequences within our community. Again, brings me now to the European, because that toxic culture has distorted the European who proudly projects that culture across the world and says it is and has always been the best culture. It hasn't, and it has never been. I think this is one of the things that if the collective therapy that was starting to happen in the 50s continued, I think that would have become evident as the 80s and 90s unfolded. That stated, this society in particular, white culture says that it values only a few things. Power and money. And both of them things are connected. It also values the outlaw. Now you may say, well, wait a minute, wait, it doesn't value the outlaw. It values, you know, people who maintain law and order. I would disagree. This society values the outlaw. Yes, it tends to, you know, especially when you look at the Western concept, it tends to couch the outlaw in terms of the law and order. But if you look at the person actually enforcing the law, if you look at the sheriff is usually, we wouldn't call him corrupt. We'd say that the sheriff plays by his own rules. And if the law books don't allow him to play by his own rules, you know what? He throws the law book out or he torches it. That is an outlaw. Moreover, I know obviously one of the most popular cultural cinematic experiences presently has to do with Marvel, DC, and the like. Most of the characters are outlaws. They don't, you know, they're aliens or mutants or whatever they care to call them. But they are outside of the law. There is very few consequences to anything they do. They destroy buildings, they kill literally thousands or millions of people, and it doesn't matter. There's no consequences. This society loves outlaws. Now, the problem with that is the cultural image of an outlaw usually involves a gun. Usually involves a gun. And if we take it back to the, quote, pioneer people and the pioneering spirit, those guns were usually used against what? Innocent people who needed to be removed or needed to be captured for the progress of the society to go forward. In other words, when you see somebody out here killing folk because the person got angry, because the person didn't like something, because the person was stressed out, because the person was a number of things, do you realize that person is following a long and storied historical trend of annihilating people? Not because they did anything to them, not because they posed a threat, but because at the end of the day, they could. Their power position allowed them to do it. And in today's modern world, where power is reserved for the people with money, or so you think, the gun is the next best thing to feeling powerful. Why? Because the gun gives you the opportunity and the ability to play God. Now, for those of you who are in the middle class who hear this and say, oh, well, that's stupid. Is it? Is it? Didn't I just go through a little bit of the history with you on some of this? Moreover, if you're in the middle class, and I'm not talking about the faux pas middle class, you know, it's fake crap where they're like, you're making $40,000 and you're in the middle class. You're making $40,000, you ain't in no damn middle class. You have to go about 70 or 80 because, see, in the middle class, in order to be comfortably in the middle class, you ain't worried about money. You're not worried. I'm not saying that you don't have expenses that cause you to worry about money, but if you are living like some of these people in the lower class who are, you know, making $50,000, $45,000, $40,000, if you were living more cautiously like they were living, man, you'd be fine. You know, you'd $70,000, you can make it. You'd be good. But a lot of people in the middle class don't live that way. They live like they have, you know, 10 times more money than they do. That stated, your power is in your ability to not worry every day about the basics of life coming your way. You know, if you need to go to a doctor, you can go. Well, people who are not making that much money, even with Obamacare, because of how high these corporations are charging us for the pleasure of using their product, should be a human right, should be nationalized. I'm done playing with these people. It's just, you don't compromise with cancer. You either destroy it or it destroys you. It's either or. So, and before you interpret that as, oh, he's talking violence. He's talking violence. Please, 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 get off me with that. You know, student of Dr. King, I don't believe in physical violence. No, I leave the physical violence to the evil entities that put people in the poorhouse in order to deprive them of health care. So, you know, look in the mirror next time you want to come at me with that. Anyway, the inability to take care of your own life, to provide not only for yourself but for your children, that makes you feel deflated. And in those times when you are your lowest, you're most depressed, that is when you are susceptible to all kinds of negative influences, including what we might call negative thinking patterns. And that's tragic, because in this society where there is imprintations everywhere that has never been resolved, historical imprintations, marking where these horrific scenes of carnage and violence have taken place. People who are depressed, people who are constantly down, can start accessing these things, and they can become overly influenced by them. Now, I know this is nuts. You know, for those of you who don't know, you know, I like metaphysics. I'm a spiritual person. And I've talked often about the layered spiritual meaning of things that other people don't see as that spiritual. You have to understand, when you are talking about a three-dimensional world, you are talking about a three-dimensional world. Most of you don't even know what the word dimension means. It's always amazing to me. Oh, yeah, this 3D world. Okay, what does dimensional mean? And before you think you know, you probably don't. And trust me when I tell you. And there's going to come a day, and I do mean this in the next couple of years, where we're going to be talking about some words and what their meanings are. Their real meanings, their hidden meanings, all kinds of stuff. And dimension will be one of them. When you are talking about three-dimensional concepts, you are talking about a spiritual reality that most of you don't like to take into account. I do because Dr. King did. I do because it's natural for me. I do because that's where I receive some of my greatest insights. When I'm sitting alone and I'm speaking with God, and I'm talking with my ancestors, and I'm seeing the collective, that is how I'm able to come up with this stuff, y'all. This stuff ain't me. You know, I wish I was this smart, to quote one of my elders. I wish I was this smart. Nah, God, as my mama would have said, God tapped me on the shoulder and said, you need to tell these people this. That's why I'm here right now recording this. Is because God tapped me on the shoulder and said, you need to go and tell him that. Do it. So that's why I'm here. When you are depressed, ladies and gentlemen, that is a spiritual state. I've talked about it before. It is a spiritual state. And it leaves your mind opened to negative imprintation. Now, am I saying that you could be possessed? I'm a believer of possession. I do believe a person can be possessed, yes. But that's not what I'm actually talking about. Everything created has a spiritual resonance. Everything created has a spiritual resonance. Everything destroyed has a spiritual resonance, especially when that destruction is unjust and it's based on trauma. There is a spiritual resonance. And so, if there is not proper clearing away of those traumatic events, you can access those traumatic events. You can access aspects of those traumatic events, and you can be tormented by them. And it can force you to do things that you normally would not do. I want to give you a great example of this because it's, you know, there are seldom time periods where you're like, wow, ooh, man, that there's something deeper to that. I don't know what it is, but there's something deeper than that. The the murder that occurred in the church in was South Carolina, the Manuel Church. It was clear to me at the time, and even more so now, that there was an influence there of those who sought to destroy the Denmark VC plot there. Dylan Roof, who was a racist, oh, I'm sorry, he's still living. I'm still not sure how that works. They're probably protecting him in prison. Anyway, who is a racist, who is a person who is destructive and desires to be destructive to the black psyche and the black community, tapped into that rage and that energy that was already in existence in that area and used it to commit those murders against innocent people. I apologize for that, not heinous. I was thinking back actually on descriptives of what he could should be called, but those heinous acts against those innocent people. And that was a time period when I was like, oh, yeah, there is definitely something spiritual there. And what's funny about it is it seemed like even the media knew that was the truth. You know, because they kept bringing up, how weird is this that, you know, Denmark VC, that connection, and the slave revolt that got tipped off. And even they seemed to understand that there was something deeper there. But if you want a brilliant, connection, which this one really got me. Columbine. The proximity of the Columbine massacre, the two students who actually committed the crimes there, and their parents' work. Now, I had the honor of watching a lecture 13 years ago, I think it was. With one of the surviving students who actually, I believe he was shot from Columbine. And there still was a power around that whole event for me. But when you look at the correlation between the weapons of war that were being created by those parents, which were being sent overseas to destroy villages and homes and families and communities and school buildings and hospitals and, you know, water treatment centers, all the like, innocent people most of the time. And I mean overwhelmingly most of the time. And then you think about the number of people from that community that had gone over and fought some of those battles, because they couldn't be called wars and they barely could be called battles because most of the people were innocent. And they came back. And you think about then the depression of those two men. And you think about all I've just talked about. And you really, really, really think about it. It's not hard to see the spiritual connection. And this really dives into a fear that I have. I won't talk about it a lot because I can't. I mean, there's too much to it. But there's a big fear that I have about war and about a society that wages war over there so we don't have to pay attention over here. A country that says we must fight to protect our way of life, and yet doesn't give the meaning of that statement. What does it mean, we must fight to protect our way of life? What does it mean? Do you know? A country that hides the cost of war, the human toll of war, the social toll, the spiritual toll of war, in a country that doesn't want to talk about what war, constant war, means to a society, what it creates in the society. The spiritual consequence and consequences, because there are many, 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 is the bringing home of death. Is the bringing home of death. I read a book years ago, and it was a strange book. I don't know how true it was, but I liked it because it seemed to have an appreciation of the depth of actions, especially when you're talking about war. The book was a supposed telling of some channels put together by a couple of people as to kind of a hidden history of the world, of Earth, and what preceded it. Now, whatever you may think of that concept, I thought the book was pretty interesting. Not because I believed everything in it, but because, again, there was this appreciation of long-lasting effects of actions and activities. A suggestion that what happened in one era would impact another era, would impact another era, until there was a synthesizing of the lessons that needed to be learned. One of the lessons that was not learned was the spiritual, the spiritual injury associated with war. When a human body, I don't want to really go deep into this, but when a human body is tore up by weapons of mass destruction, that's these bombs that we drop, the drone killings that happen, you know, not hypersonic, because I don't believe the United States has that yet, but the quick-fired bullets, all of that. When the body is tore up, the being is tore up, the spirit is tore up. And while, you know, if you're in a plane, you don't have to worry about getting any of that necessarily on you. If you're on the ground and the wind is blowing, the air is moving, you can get the spiritual chunks of war on you. And because we in this country not all of us, but some of us, don't really believe in doing spiritual cleansing, you don't get rid of those chunks. They become, if your body doesn't shed them, they become part of you. A lot of the times when people have PTSD, it is built on fragmented reality that they have carried with them. It is built on a fragmented soul, and not really soul, but auric field being that enables them to be penetrated by fragmented realities that were created during war. Now, I know this seems crazy, this seems nuts, I'm fine with that. You think what you're going to think, I'm all right, I'm going to do me over here. They bring that stuff here, and they leave it. They leave it with the people they love. They leave it with the people they come into close contact with. And if they are a pillar in a community where people are drawing inspiration and knowledge from them, they leave it with them too. My father used to lament that common sense was at a premium in the 90s, that a lot of young people did not get common sense. And I didn't understand what he meant by that. I understand what he meant by that. I really finally get it. There is a spiritual transition that happens with the generations when intercourse is taking place. And once when pregnancy happens, there is a slow process of spiritually giving knowledge to the child, even while in utero. If there is something that disrupts that spiritual transfer, a lot of your music does that today. A lot of your music does that today. Or the father is gone because war. The child will try to make up that acquisition of spiritual knowledge when the father returns, when the parent returns. Because obviously, clearly, women also get deployed, but most women are not going to be deployed when they're pregnant. It is during that spiritual transition, transmission, that is when some of these traumas also built in. In short, what happens over there does not stay over there. It comes here. It comes here in those little fragments of soul and being and life and reality that gets stuck to the being. Now, I had doubts about all this, ladies and gentlemen. I had doubts about all of this until there was a book that I read, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. But there was a book that I read on healing the fragmented soul. And that really helped me perceive what I wasn't seeing. Moreover, as I listened to the History of Rome podcast, I started seeing hints of war madness that clearly was a spiritual sickness. I cannot remember who it was, and I feel terrible that I can't remember who it was, because maybe it was Marius, because this was really what kind of did it for me. When this Roman had taken, this was before Caesar, if I remember correctly. Yeah, this was before Caesar. And I think it was Marius. So he had taken the consulship by force. And he had put out a list of all these people who were going to be murdered. And he had them literally brought into the chambers and murdered in side rooms while he was conducting business. And that was when I realized, okay, this thing I've been thinking about for years, yeah, yes, yes. And obviously you could say, well, that's a weird thing to kind of draw a conclusion to. But having seen friends of mine go to Iraq, get into fights over there, lose friends, experience explosion, things like that, and then see them come back and see what it's done to them, yeah. And then reading the spiritual stuff I've read, it makes a lot of sense. Anyway, I don't know how this is going to be stopped. We didn't get here overnight. And I don't know if people have what it takes to stop it. Because putting people in prison ain't going to stop this. Making sure everybody has guns ain't going to stop this. You're going to have to get to the underlying cause. So I want to thank you guys. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me. I know this one was a little bit of a heavy lift. It went from being very logical to spiritual. And, you know, I get not everybody's going to be down with that, but I am going to be down with it, so I can't help you if you're not. Anyway, guys, I will see you on the next one. I know, I can't believe it. I'm back. CWB, it's back. Wow. Till the next one, y'all. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.